There's some political guys who talk like tough guys. They affect that tough guy manner and kind of like a pug on the street corner, walking stiff-legged, looking up at the bigger dogs. When you see a politician, tough guy, and then you see the real tough guy, it's like the difference between that pug and a wolf. And it's something that Mike McLean, the ComEd lobbyist and apostle of Michael Madigan, is going to learn. Mike Madigan hasn't been indicted. He hasn't been accused of anything. He denies everything that people say about him. And that's his right. And I want to be on record saying that I did quote him saying that. Once he said, "I'm not the target of anything." But in reality, he's the target of everything. At least everything that you've been reading about lately in that $200 million bribery scandal out of ComEd. Mike McLean, former lobbyist and Madigan guy, Madigan's confidant. One of the only few people that would have dinner with Madigan in Springfield in public is indicted. So is John Hooker, political fixer of ComEd for years. I remember him back in the days when they were putting together that ComEd deal for City Hall with Frank Cruzzi. Frank Cruzzi, who would sell a rat's asshole to a blind man for a wedding ring. And then you have my friend, Jay Doherty's also indicted, and I'm sorry for it, but we'll see what happens. I know Jay, I know his family. He's a good father, but it appears that he was a funneler of money, according to the indictments. And of course, Ann Premajuri, the former CEO of Exelon, board member at the Chicago Federal Reserve, former, had to resign. She's indicted too. It's a web, and it needs to be, we got to pull out each strand so you can understand it and see how far it's going. And we'll do that with Jason Meisner, Chicago Tribune, who broke the McLean story, the McLean FBI raid on his house story more than a year ago. I think of a picture, that picture I wrote about last week, the one of Mike Madigan in shadow, photograph in the Tribune. Mike Madigan's in shadow, his back up against the wall, and his hands covering his mouth, and he's staring, not out of fear, but it looks like he's staring into the future. He's looking at what's coming at him. One thing he's got to be thinking about is, will Mike McLean stand up? Or is he going to crack like Scotty Faywell? Scotty Faywell was the Republican Wonder Boy, George Ryan's aide-de-camp, Governor George Ryan. And he said he wouldn't testify. And he was acting like a tough guy, just like McLean is acting like a tough guy. Funny thing about tough guys, when that federal hammer comes down, they usually don't hold up. Chris Kelly was Blago's guy. He committed suicide. Robert Zorich was Daley's guy, Richard M. Daley. Zorich was actually the front man for a patronage operation. He didn't really run it. He was just the front guy. Everybody knew it. And maybe that's why they gave him a break. But he went away. He went away to prison. Kept his mouth shut. Didn't testify on any of the dailies or Tim Degnan or anybody else who wasn't indicted or charged with anything. He just kept quiet. They threw him a pizza party in Bridgeport at the church, in the basement of the Church of the Nativity. Going away pizza party. I wonder what was in that pizza. How many dead presidents were in those pizzas? The parish priest, Father Brandt, compared Zorich to me to Jesus Christ, who had his own legal problems. He was wrongly convicted, said Father Brandt. Father's a good guy. I like him. It tells you how tribal people get when the feds come knocking at the door. And we're going to see. We're going to see about Mike McClain. Whether he cracks like Scotty Faywell, blubbering on the witness stand. Whether he, well, I hope to God he doesn't play it like Chris Kelly, who committed suicide in a filthy shack in the south suburbs for Blagojevich. And then there was Zorich, who stood up and got his pizza. It's all something to see. And all those names Mike Madigan is thinking about. And the wheels are turning in his head. As the Democrats like Pritzker and Durbin come after his speakership, which if he loses it, it's like a leverage, something to negotiate with the feds. I told you Jason Meisner is going to be here. Can't think of anyone better on this subject or many others involving the federal building. And Jeff Garland is always here. Jeff is the executive producer at WGN Radio. And without him, this podcast wouldn't happen. And I'm John Cass, husband, father, columnist at the Chicago Tribune, member of its editorial board. And where are you with Mike Madigan against the wall, thinking he's like a fox about to be trapped, struggling in the snow? Maybe he could hear the sticks in the bush scraping together as it struggles and screams. And the feds with that spot on the wall for the pelt. You're on the Chicago Way on WGN Plus.
Look, the Chicago Way is a deep cultural phenomenon.
It's the Chicago Way.
In a tower by the river, there lived a man.
Castle.
There was a man who took a stand with pen and paper in his hand, defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso. In a tower by the river, Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago Way.
So we're back on the Chicago Way with Jason Meisner and Jeff Carlin. And if you like what you hear, please subscribe to us on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Spotify, all the podcast platforms carry it. And if it's on iTunes, write us a kick-ass review. I expect 5 stars, and maybe if you know, we'll arrange something. But it won't be legal fees to Victor Reyes' law firm, I guarantee. We've got Jason Meisner on the phone. Jason, what the hell is happening with Mike Madigan and that $200 million scandal of ComEd?
Hey, John. Well, we had a bombshell come down. It wasn't unexpected, but it hit Wednesday night after hours. An indictment charging one of Madigan's oldest friends, Michael McClain, and then the CEO, former CEO of ComEd, Ann Promaggiore, and two others, Jay Doherty and John Hooker, with this it's a massive bribery conspiracy is the only way it could be described, where they were orchestrating payments, jobs, do-nothing jobs, allegedly to Madigan's friends and political operatives, in exchange for the speaker's help with legislation that ComEd needed passed in Springfield. So we're awaiting on December 2nd, these 4 defendants are going to come in for an arraignment. Actually, they're not going to come in. They're going to appear via video for their arraignment, which will start this case rolling. But it is now reached, it's been about a year and a half since we first reported that this investigation was ongoing. And they have now reached just about as close to Madigan as you can get in charging this Michael McLean, who goes back with Madigan back to the 70s when they were in the legislature together.
Michael McLean was a young teacher when he became the Padawan of the Sith Lord and began to learn the dark arts of politics. I was in the federal building not too long ago speaking with Attorney General Barr, and there was John Lausch, and I got the sense that they thought things were proceeding pretty well. Do you feel, though, I mean, let's restate what's happening. Michael Madigan has not been charged. He has not been indicted. He has not been formally accused of any wrongdoing. He denies everything. He denies that he did anything wrong. But
correct,
like Rod Blagojevich a number of years ago, he is official A in the federal documents. And now I guess the next step is who talks? Who gets on that federal bus and makes a deal? Right?
Right. I mean, Madigan, you saw his statement the day after the indictment released on Thursday. It was 2 pages. It wasn't like a, and it was a denial, and it was, you know, he says, to the extent that these other people could have orchestrated the scheme, I had no idea, and if I had known about it, I would have put a stop to it.
The velvet hammer in full force.
So you have to. So to believe that, you would have to believe that Michael McLean, his oldest friend, was doing this all without Madigan knowing. So obviously,
while they were having dinner at Saputo's, Mike Madigan usually sits alone in Springfield for dinner. McLean is one of the only people that sit with him, and Steve Brown is a mouthpiece. And I guess, yeah, that'll be a bone of contention if it moves forward.
I love that that idea, because either he's the most powerful man in Springfield who controls every little lever and switch, or he's bumbling and somehow his underlings are pulling off a multi-million dollar scheme. Which is it? There isn't a gray area there.
Right, to benefit him without him knowing. So what?
Right.
You know, you got to ask who's the benefactor here. But McLean obviously is. You know, he said before that he won't cooperate against. He couldn't bring himself to do it against Madigan. But of course, that was before he was charged. So now he's charged. He will be arraigned. His lawyer will start to get discovery, transcripts, emails, witness statements. They're going to see the magnitude of the case against him. And I've been talking to attorneys who have noted a lot of the things that drive the sentencing factors in cases like this is the dollar amount. So you got to look at ComEd allegedly benefited to the tune of $150 million. So they could start there with what he's on the hook for. His sentencing guidelines could be sky high, in other words.
Correct.
And he's 73 years old. So he has to start doing the calculus, which criminal defendants have to do, weighing your personal, you know, what's best for you and your family against your loyalty to somebody. And he's going to have to do that, go through that.
And so
I'm sure there will be a lot of pressure to cooperate. There already has been.
And so will they all. And Primajori's got to think, my life wasn't supposed to turn out this way. John Hooker, who I've known since, you know, he was years ago at City Hall. He was always a political fixer for ComEd. Nice guy, could deal with all the aldermen. He made he worked with Frank Cruzy, the Mayor Daley's Rasputin, who I keep quoting Vonnegut when I think of him, a guy who would sell a rat's asshole to a blind man for a wedding ring. And they put together that ComEd franchise, you know, deal that's going to last for another 50 years or something for Chicago. And then Jay Doherty, generally a nice guy. I know his family. I know him. I would consider him a friend. But he's also been, according to the documents,
a funneler, right? A funneler of hundreds of thousands of dollars. To who, Jason?
Yeah, his company, J.D. Doherty. And so, of course, J.D. Doherty is best known as the former leader of the City Club of Chicago. But he also had a consulting firm that, according to the federal indictment, was used as kind of like a clearinghouse, basically, to hide these payments. So they don't have to be registered lobbyist payments. They were paying. I think if you tally it all up in the indictment, it's about $1.5 million to various Madigan operatives for various services, quote unquote. So a lot of them were do nothing positions, or they didn't do any actual work, according to the indictment. So you got Pramaggiore, Doherty, and John Hooker as part of the scheme, but the quarterback allegedly was Michael McClain.
And then where does my old friend Whispering Victor Reyes fit in?
Yeah, I've read a lot of old your old articles about Vic Reyes recently. Because, of course, he goes way back. The Democratic Hispanic, what was it, HGO?
Yeah, Hispanic Daily Organization. Yeah.
He was part of the whole patronage scandal, never charged. And still has his law firm, very politically connected law firm, Reyes Kirsten, that is at the center of this whole scheme, because it was the hiring of his law firm that McClain allegedly helped orchestrate. ComEd had to hire Reyes Kirsten to get in Madigan's good graces. This goes all the way back to 2011, I believe.
Right.
And then there's a bunch of emails included in the indictment that when ComEd tried to reduce Reyes Kirsten's hours, McClain, I wouldn't say went ballistic, but he fired off an email to Ann Pramaggiore warning her that our friend, capital F, meaning Madigan, was not going to be too happy if he finds out that they're not going to pay Vic Reyes as much. So I think he warns in the email, you know, like, do we have to go through this? Because our friend is going to call me, and then I'm going to call you, and you're going to pay him. So why even go through all this? Just pay him.
This sounds like other columns we've written, stories we've worked on together, like outfit shakedowns. Like, do you really want me to – come on, do you want me to call Johnny No-Nose? Do I really got to go that far? Do I got to call the boss?
And then,
I mean, if I do –
McClain would be the consigliere in that scenario. He's the buffer.
He's the buffer, Senator. And also, so here, you know what? We're jumping around, but I think listeners and readers who've boned up on this stuff can follow. What's interesting to me is that what you laid out just now, with all the friend email and all the other stuff and the squeezing of Ann Pramaggiore, et cetera, compare that to, if we look at that and then look at Madigan's statement that, hey, I had nothing to do with all this. I had nothing to do with it. It's almost like if you're in McClain's position, or at least I would think a federal prosecutor's position, you're going back to him and saying, hey, Madigan's saying this is all on you. $150 million to $200 million of rate hikes. It's all on you.
Right. That's where the calculus comes in.
Right.
And he's not the first person to be in this position. You got Scott Faywell years ago.
Right.
With George Ryan. With Blagojevich. I think, you know, there were a lot of cooperators in the Blagojevich case that kind of all jumped on the bus. But the big one was Lon Monk. Blagojevich's old friend from Pepperdine Law School, groomsman at his wedding. When he flipped, he was the one who could tell the feds how Blagojevich was benefiting from all this. Otherwise, it was just basically Resco and the other guys running around trying to make money off the government. But Lon Monk helped them put it together. Faywell helped put George Ryan in prison. And now you've got a figure like Michael McClain, who there will be pressure on him to do the same thing for Mike Madigan.
You know, Jeff and Jason, I remember when Faywall was acting like a tough guy back then, when he was George Ryan's wonder boy from the western suburbs. I think Hinsdale from the Faywall political family. And he was just a real tough guy at Lino's. I remember Lino's restaurant. He was ordering extra rounds of prosciutto, and he'd tell me how the prosciutto was good here, because look, they bring it out on the cart, you know, the whole head, the whole leg of prosciutto. Like, I was like talking to some guy who had watched too many gangster movies, and he was really tough. And then all, you know what happened with that? Remember, Jace?
The fiance.
I remember him
squirting some tears and talking about they had my head in a vice, and there's nothing I can do, right?
What happened?
Andrea?
What happened was he was seeing another woman who was married, and her name was Andrea Kotretsis. And I worked on the story, and we talked to Phil Collins, right? Phil Collins, the prosecutor. Is that right? Do I have his name right?
Patrick
Collins, right.
Patrick.
And what happened was Faywell tells her to burn this evidence so to protect George Ryan. She goes to her brother-in-law and her husband and says, burn the evidence. And they figure out that she's two-timing him with Scotty Faywell. So instead of burning the evidence in the Weber kettle, where, you know, that Jason Meissner and John Cass know all very well, we know how to use those, they went to the FBI. The favored list was part of the stuff they wanted to burn, with all the different favors that George Ryan did for people. And many were embarrassed, and Scott Faywell ended up going to prison. When he went to prison, he stopped being a tough guy, right? And he ended up blubbering on that witness stand.
Jeez. What?
They had a former federal prosecutor I was talking to tell me, you know, I said something like, well, McClain says he'll never flip. And he says they all say that, and it's true. Right up until the moment that they flip. They all say, they act like tough guys. Well, I'm not going to say everybody, because there are, but often they act like tough guys up until they flip.
But in this case, which is unlike the Zorich case, Zorich did not flip on the Dailies or Tim Degnan or Victor Reyes. I mean, he was the front guy for a patronage operation, but it wasn't really his patronage operation. He just took the pipe for it. But in this case, when you put up, if sentencing guidelines involve money, when you put up $150 million that taxpayers were forced to pay to take care of ComEd and Mike Madigan's friends, at least, and McClain and those guys, he's got to think. I mean, I can't imagine a federal judge being lenient on that sentencing level.
Mm-hmm.
Right? No way. Now, especially with so many people being affected by it, i.e. the entire freaking state. Jeez. And you know what pisses me off the most about all of it?
By the time he goes, if he goes to trial, by the time he goes to trial and gets convicted and sentenced, we were talking, he's going to be 76, 77 years old. Any kind of prison time is you're looking at the rest of your life, or substantial portion of the rest of your life. So, Sorich was only in his, 40s?
Yeah, he was in his 40s. And
so he could say, I'll go in and do 5 years, whatever he did, and come out on the other side.
He came out the other side, but remember, they threw a pizza party for him.
Right. Oh, yeah.
They threw a pizza party.
He was just like Jesus or something.
Yeah, that's what Father Brandt said. Well, Jesus had his legal troubles too. He was wrongly convicted. I was like, Father, I hope you don't go. You better say an act of contrition for that.
I don't think McClain will be looking forward to a pizza party if he's going away for 8 years when he's 76.
Well, that's important to know. Now, what about my friend Jay Doherty? I worry about him, but, you know.
That's what I was thinking. He's got the most to lose out of all of this because he's, you know, he's got a family and he's younger and he's got a bit of a legacy to kind of to protect, I guess. And, you know, I mean, John, you and I met his son interned for John Williams, and he's such a nice guy, I feel so bad for all of them.
Well,
yeah, Jay Doherty was the only one, if you saw the reaction from the defense attorneys that came out right after the indictment, seemed like McClain and Hooker and to some extent Promaggiore all came out blasting the prosecutors. They seem to have gotten their statements like organized, and we're all going to say similar things about how this is all just prosecutors overstepping the law to get to the big fish, Mike Madigan. Doherty's lawyers just said, you know, we intend to show that he's not guilty. He's not guilty, and we intend to take it to trial. So his statement was a little more subdued. I don't know if you can read anything into that, but they're all going to be trying to, well, they're going to have to look at the evidence first, because to some extent they're kept in the dark as to exactly what the feds have. They know that McClain's phone has been tapped, and they know what they've said, or at least they have a gist of what they've said on the phone with him. So, but they're going to get transcripts of all that, and they're going to get other evidence, and then they'll have to decide whether trial makes
sense. We're talking with Jason Meisner, the stellar Chicago Tribune federal building reporter, who's been covering federal prosecutors and federal crime for quite some time now. We worked together on the column years ago when I called him Wings, and he gave me that killer Kentucky bourbon wings recipe. Jason, what about, there seems to be something new that we didn't, when the indictment came out, that I didn't know, which was there was a hint that one of, do I have this wrong? A hint that one of the phone conversations McClain made did have Madigan on it. There was some discussion about hours and maybe Reyes or something. What was it?
The Madigan was on the conversation. Not that I'm aware of. Yeah.
Well, what was
new? Not that I'm aware of that he was on one of the conversations.
What was new in that indictment, besides the indictment?
The indictment went into a lot more detail on this alleged scheme that involved the ComEd summer internship program, which is it's probably more of a minor thing money-wise, but it's just interesting to me that, you know, bribery schemes like this can involve, you know, these college kids who want jobs. They get lists together of people, favored people from the 13th Ward, to give Joe Smith's son a college or a combat internship when he probably is not as qualified as somebody from outside the 13th Ward. So that was fleshed out a lot in this indictment. The other parts of it, we already knew the basic alleged scheme, but I don't recall anything in there about Madigan being on a phone call, because that would be.
So do you think Madigan is on any phone calls? Have you heard anything about that?
No, we don't. We've had no indication that Madigan's on any calls. They had claims phone tapped for, we believe, you know, months, 5 or 6 months, maybe, which is a long time. For an investigation like this, they have to continuously go in to a judge and say, we're getting evidence of a crime here, so we can keep going and recording. But I have not seen any evidence that they have Madigan on tape talking about anything related to this scheme. They did record conversations in person meetings with him way back in the Solis investigation. So they have him, at least. And that was part of the affidavit that led to Daniel Solis cooperating against Ed Burke. But as far as phone conversations, you know better than me that he, I don't think Madigan does, he famously does not talk on the phone, right?
The story Madigan is he doesn't have a cell phone, or he doesn't use one. And that I've had conversations with people who've talked to him for a half hour, say on the phone or in person, and you walk away, and you don't know what Madigan said or what his position is because he just sat there, he just sit there and listen. He's very guarded and extremely careful. A guy like McClane, he taught McClane everything. So he'd tell him a lot.
It's funny you guys always mention that too. You bring up that fact about the phone thing. And when I do work for radio, every time I'm posting a story or a an interview or something to their website, I have to go through like Getty or AP photos. And there's always a photo of him on the floor. And I think it's at one of the during the COVID stuff here. So everyone's kind of spaced out. And it's him on a flip phone, and it's just it always strikes me as being, one, it's a flip phone, so it's even harder to try to probably trace something like that.
The burner.
Right, exactly. And that just kills me every time because I always just think back to all the conversations we've had about that, how that there's all that idea that he's so guarded. But there it is, his flip phone. It's got to be his trusty, like you said, it might be a burner, who knows. But it gets me every time.
Two places
Maybe he's playing Brick Breaker.
Or Snake.
Two places I would bug, if I were the feds, I would bug Saputo's, that table, that corner table of his. And I would bug the little table off the main dining room at Palermo's 95th. Because that's where which is great pizza. I think you guys have had pizza there, right? Have we gone there, Jace?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
That's another place that he goes where he talks to people, old timers that he knows. But still, I don't know where this is going, and I just got to think he's got to be thinking, will they stand up? Because I don't see how, when you have that $150 million, $200 million leverage on sentencing guidelines, I don't see anybody standing up. But we'll see. Now, what's the next step? Arraignments after Thanksgiving, right?
Yeah, the Wednesday after Thanksgiving, they're going to have this video arraignment, all four of them. So that'll start the clock ticking. And these, there's other pieces of this investigation that are still hanging out there, but obviously when they brought this indictment, this was the big one. There's only one person missing at this point, and it's public official A. So they can always supersede it with further charges, but I wouldn't expect any activity as far as new charges for a while now, at least as part of this ComEd scheme. Now they've got a lot of other things going on. People have forgotten about Ed Burke a little bit, and we had a number of aldermen under investigation. And, of course, there's the whole angle of the investigation that went into Martin Sandoval, Mike Vondra, the asphalt guys out in the southwest suburbs. So there's still a lot going on, but this one that dropped on Wednesday was one we were waiting for a long time.
Does this investigation have a name?
Doesn't yet, as far as I know.
I mean, because
you would think it would by now.
We're talking about an incredible amount of stuff going on with the FBI. The FBI Public Integrity Unit has been working. I don't know how the hell they did it with. I mean, there's just so much that they've done, wiring up Danny Solis, wiring up Burke's phone, all the stuff on Sandoval, all the stuff on the light, the cameras, the red light cameras, Madigan. Everything.
I was, I still remember, it wasn't that long ago. It was maybe May of 2019. We were just not getting out with the Burke stuff. Was all pretty brand new, and like bombshell. Wow, Ed Burke indicted.
The brown paper over the windows.
We were still chasing that when we first started hearing. Ray Long called me and said, "Hey, I just talked to somebody who said that a prosecutor and an FBI agent paid them a visit and were asking questions about checks and Mike Madigan and ComEd." And that's the first And I thought, do they even have enough guys to be investigating Michael Madigan right now when they're doing Ed Burke and Solis and all that stuff? Well, apparently they had enough guys because that started it all. And then we learned that McClane's home had been raided and everything was off to the races.
There was another great story that you and Jason Meisner and Ray Long broke, the raid on McClane's house, which was about a year and a half ago. One of the great features, used to not like the internet, you know, newspapers on the internet, but one of the great features, I used it today or the other day, is when you write something, you can also include links to those stories. I included the link to your story and to other stuff about Sorich and Chris Kelly and Scotty Faywell, and you can do that. And you guys broke that when? Like a year and a half ago, right? That was a huge story. And then
it was July. It was early July, I believe. The raid had happened in May, but of course it was in Quincy, so they were able to keep it fairly quiet. I've never been down there, but you know they were able to go in, and it wasn't until early July that we started to hear about it, and I think we broke the story in mid July, and then. And then floodgates kind of opened, and the whole, you know, the combat scheme started to come to light about a year ago.
One of the aspects of some of the reporting you and Ray have done is the emails from Michael McClane, Madigan's apprentice, about the most trusted of the trusted. And I could not believe when I read that stuff, where McClane is basically putting together a gang of guys to raise money and give money to take care of one of Madigan's underlings, which would, I assume, be in evidence in the trial, if there is one.
Yeah, we know that they were looking at emails, including that one where he refers to the most trusted of the trusted, and also he refers to himself, capital H. Which I had never seen before, and struck everybody who were, you know.
Of course.
Everybody thought that was very odd to refer to this person as himself, almost like it's God. But apparently it's an old Irish thing. The head of the household is sometimes called himself.
I suppose you've
that's never, how he was referring to Mike Madigan.
If you didn't know that, you probably aren't a fan like I am of John Ford movies like The Quiet Man. and She Wore a Yellow Ribbon, where Victor McLaughlin, who looked exactly like my grandfather, would be his sergeant, speaking in an Irish brogue, talking about himself, wants us to kill the Apaches or something like that.
yeah. So, if he was trying to disguise it was Madigan, I don't think he did a very good job.
Oops.
Do you think, and I this is speculation, so I don't know, maybe Jeff can answer instead, but I got a feeling based on the people I've talked to around Madigan, and I do respect the man for his genius and cunning, that he's got to think, if there ever is a trial, he can't survive it because of the political climate of Illinois. What do you think, Jeff?
Oh, you mean and hold on to his power or anything? No, there's no way. I mean, as we're taping this, there's a growing list of Democrats who have publicly come out. A lot of them are younger, you know, first, second termers, but kind of this new breed of Democrats. And they're all out for him, and the numbers are growing. And that aside, what's that?
They took his money. They took his help.
Yep.
Knew who he was. They backed him before. They backed him now. He got him through November, and now they say no. Oh my God! I don't know. I can't be associated with Mike Madigan. Well, why did you take his money then?
Right, right. Well, it's untenable for them though to continue down that line, even if he did give them all his favors, because you know the future is the future. Because like I said before, there's this whole idea that if he's the keeper of the General Assembly, he's got all the keys, and this was going on, well, then you're either a buffoon, which we know he's not, or you're complicit, and there's no middle ground there, because we know his stranglehold on everything that goes on down there. And so even if it doesn't play out in court where they can tie it to him, or someone flips on him and he gets nailed to the door, you can't keep him. You can't. It's just, no one could be logically or conceivably say, hey, he's my guy. It doesn't make sense. It just doesn't make sense, because then they're all complicit.
In a way, even if they never charged Michael Madigan, in a way they've already won. If he, they end his reign as Speaker, 4 decades as Speaker, just in this investigation, that's something. Even if he's never charged. But, John, I remember when I was your leg man, I think it must have been the 2010 election, when there was the Tribune editorial board was calling for Democrats to stand up and not renew Madigan's speakership. And, of course, nobody did. I can't remember what the final vote was, but you had me calling every single Democrat who voted for Mike Madigan as Speaker to ask them why. And just the quotes we get back then, which is now 10 years ago, as opposed to what I'm hearing now, it's just amazing how quickly it changed. Like, everybody, nobody dared say anything, to now you got these younger representatives who are at least paying lip service to not supporting him.
Like Will Guzzardi, who is one of, look, yeah. I have nothing against Mr. Guzzardi or Madigan personally, but I find it all fascinating. You take the guy's money and then you rip on him? Well, I don't see how that works, but I guess it does if you speak loud enough, and if reporters who help position you as some kind of reformer, right? Because that's all going to happen. That's going to happen outside the federal building. Republicans will be used. The Republicans will be calling, I guess, somebody, maybe a suburban woman who was part of the Me Too thing, and a suburban Democrat, and throw their votes to her and select a new speaker. One thing, Jason, in terms of when these things go to before they go to trial, before someone pleads, there's negotiation, right? Isn't there a negotiation between the defense lawyer and the judge?
Not only now, but we know offhand that there's always negotiation before the charges are even brought, or usually there's proffer sessions, and a good defense attorney. These defendants all have excellent defense attorneys. I think all of them are former either U.S. attorneys or assistant U.S. attorneys, and still have contacts. So there's negotiation going on. There will be even more, I'm sure, going forward. And then we will learn eventually whether all four or any or none will go to trial.
But we don't know. But if Madigan loses his speakership and his chairmanship of the Illinois Democratic Party, then he won't be able to offer those up as part of his negotiation if indeed it goes to trial, right? Like, I could imagine a scenario where a powerful politician accused of a crime, federal crime, can say, well, I'll step down as Speaker, I'll step down from this office and the party office as part of a negotiated deal as to what's charged and what isn't charged.
Right. Yeah, he wouldn't have that if the vote is in January, right?
Right.
And then there's no way between now and then, I don't foresee anything additional moving on this case. So if he loses, he would, and no longer a Speaker, he would lose. There's nothing to step down from unless he resigns his representative.
Any of those interns that he helped get, that he allegedly helped get jobs at ComEd, did any of them ever speak up against the young man who ran against his alderman? Remember the kid from DePaul University? I forget his name now. And he ran against the alderman. And there was a big...
He ran against Quinn, right?
Right, he ran against Marty Quinn. And right. He was a freshman at DePaul. And they tried to...
Right.
they tried to destroy him, and his former girlfriend came out and said he was a, I don't know, alleged that he was a predator or something.
David Krupa.
I mean, there were
That's the one that included one of my favorite quotes of all time in your column, the clown car of felonies.
What?
The clown car of felonies. You're talking. The lawyer was talking about all the flunkies getting all the people to rescind their that they signed the petitions, and it turned out that they did it too well because
they overestimated how many signatures he had gotten.
They got so many recantations; it was like triple the number.
They basically used political clout to force people in Chicago to perjure themselves on a notarized government form. So wonderful.
Right.
Well, we'll see. So what do you think that, where do you think this goes in terms of investigation? There's got to be more. There's got to be a book in this thing.
Well, all that was charged on Wednesday was this ComEd scheme. We know other avenues were being pursued. We're not quite sure how far down the line they are, but there was a Chinatown land deal that was under investigation that sprung out of the Solis case and involved Madigan because it's IDOT owned land in Chinatown. And there was a deal to sell the land to a developer who wanted to turn it into a hotel. We know that Madigan's office was subpoenaed about that. They were also subpoenaed about lobbying involving AT&T, which, like ComEd, is a giant utility and, you know, regulated and needed help in Springfield. So they're at least looking at that. We don't know if any criminal charges will ever arise, but a lot of the same lobbyists who were in the ComEd sphere also lobby for AT&T. And there's a number of other things. So it's not just ComEd, but that's what's been charged so far.
And there's a giant egg, which is called property tax reductions. And downtown real estate holders, multi-million dollar clients of Madigan and Getzendanner, and attorneys and assessors, and that whole business, which hasn't even been broken yet. And I got to think, see, the thing is, once in newspapering, I can tell you this, and I would assume it goes to federal corruption hunters. When something starts breaking, all of a sudden you get so many calls and so many tips that you can't even keep them straight. Right, Jace?
Right. And you know that you were talking about assessors. One thing we haven't even talked about is Joe Berrios, because you talk about kind of like the Iron Triangle of the Chicago way. Property taxes, real estate assessments are a big part of it. And his son-in-law has been charged, Berrios' son-in-law,
right,
a scheme involving sweepstakes gambling machines, another avenue we haven't covered. So it's everywhere. There has been, sometimes has reported that Berrios is under investigation. We have not, but his son-in-law has been charged. And so they're looking into the county angle as well.
I guess Mike Madigan will be sitting there alone or with Lisa at his Thanksgiving dinner, and Pritzker will have that big fat turducken in front of him on the plate, or a whole turducken, and they're not going to be eating together, but they're both going to be thinking about the future, right? I don't think they're going to be counting their blessings. They're just going to be thinking, what moves do we make? Amazing stuff. Amazing, amazing stuff.
Yeah, I love that, Jason, the Iron Triangle of the Chicago way. So good.
Well, they got Burke, who would have to be considered, you know, the way he ran the picking of the judges and the finance committee. He's kind of like the city prong. And then Madigan absolutely is the state prong. And you got the county and the real estate taxes and all that. So I got to say, it's unprecedented. I would think it's unprecedented that they would be investigating all three at the same time. You had Silver Shovel and things like that, various investigations, Grey Lord at various times. But, John, I don't know. Can you remember when they've had all like things like this all going at the same time?
And I don't remember. What's really striking is with Silver Shovel, which was about basically throwing a bunch of minority aldermen in prison because they asked for something. What they asked out of City Hall was, where's mine? And what they got was prison, right? It was kind of like enforcement of political will and not theirs. But this is different because this goes right, this doesn't just pick up the low-hanging fruit. This goes right at Burke, right at Danny Solis, right at Madigan, ComEd, for God's sakes. ComEd, in one way, you could say, is responsible for Barack Obama. Because if it wasn't for Richard J. Daley's, Richard J. Daley's relationship with the head of ComEd at the time, Ayers, Thomas Ayers, then Bill Ayers, who was the weatherman, you know, revolutionary without a job, wouldn't have found a spot at the University of Illinois and wouldn't have been a professor and wouldn't have been involved in Chicago politics to find the young Barack Obama and give him a hand up, right? It's all one, everything's connected in this town one way or the other. And you just got to pull the threads. Jason, I guess you're going to be pulling a lot of threads in the days to come.
Well, keep pulling.
For Jason Meisner, excellent, stellar journalist and covering the federal building for the Chicago Tribune and federal authority, crime and so forth. And he knows that people who call up and say, I ain't no beaver, are actually beefers. And For Jeff Carlin, executive producer of WGN Radio. For me, John Cass, husband, father, columnist, member of the editorial board of the Chicago Tribune. Thanks for being here on another edition of the Chicago Way.
Madigan stuff stop? Do you think if, in fact, Pritzker wins and Romer is gone?
The Republicans have been using anti-Madigan rhetoric for close to 10 years. So it was nothing new with Romer. He just happened to have some money that he could put behind it. I would say, again, they really ought to try to find something in their record that they can use to persuade people to vote for Romer and the Republicans.
Do you feel at all...
Some of the anti-Madigan, as you put it, stuff came within your own party after some of the sexual harassment allegations. Yeah. How did you overcome those calls to get here today?
I talked to every member of the committee about my record as the party chairman, and that secured me 35 out of 36 votes. So, in general, the members of the committee were very receptive to my request that they vote for me to remain as the party chairman.